Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, all. Welcome to How to Fix It. I'm John Avalon, author, journalist, and this podcast is about solutions to the common problems we face. I think so often we focus and fixate on problems, but we don't talk about solutions, ways that the middle 60 of us can work together, reason together, and build a more perfect union. Today, we're talking with Philip Howard. He is a lawyer and author of books including Everyday Freedom and Try Common Sense. Philip's devoted much of his life to not only decrying the decline of common sense, but making a case for simplification in a way that has credibility on the center left and the center right. And in today's conversation, we're going to deal, yes, with DOGE, his concerns, but also the opportunities he sees for Democrats to reconnect with that reinventing government ethos advanced by Bill Clinton and Al Gore back in the day. Phil, it's great to talk with you as always. Let's kick this off by first defining our terms. Simplification. What does it mean in practice, and why is it needed, and why do you believe it's something that can have broad bipartisan support?
Well, simplification has the virtue, if done correctly, of allowing decisions on the ground to be activated by the people with responsibility. If you have a worker safety code that says tools and equipment shall be reasonably suited to the use intended, that can replace 3,000 rules, but still give people the chance to use their judgment. So you need an industrial-grade hammer when building a house, but you don't need it when tacking pictures on the wall. That sort of thing. So simplification allows people to understand law and to try to meet its goals rather than going through dense rule books.
And the urgency behind this from your perspective is not just as a lawyer, but with the newly inaugurated President Trump calling for a revolution of common sense against the backdrop of a DOGE commission, you have written with some qualified hope that we might actually be able to achieve a degree of simplification to reduce some of the thicket of overregulation as you see it. And I just want to remind folks that even though it's currently being discussed in the context of a Trump presidency with Elon Musk, and we'll get into the wither doge of it all with you, that this is an effort that, you know, was championed by Bill Clinton and Al Gore with reinventing government, looking at how to make government more efficient, more effective, maybe not to the extent you would prefer. It's something that Cass Sunstein worked on for President Obama. There has been bipartisan support for streamlining regulations and making government work better for its citizens in the past, right?
Yes. And the main goal, I think, should be to have a government that can achieve results, not to get rid of government. I think DOGE is kind of barking up the wrong tree right now because they're focusing on cutting what government does. Like Musk wants to cut the F-35 fighter program that cost $100 million a plane, that sort of thing. And maybe it does deserve to be cut. I don't know. But there's much more opportunity in changing how government does things, not what it does. You know, getting rid of 10-year permitting processes for infrastructure, you know, getting rid of 5-year processes to procure new armaments, that sort of thing. It wastes money and it doesn't achieve what the public needs.
And it delays the sense that government can be an effective force that improves people's lives. And that's where I think the common ground exists here. And look, you know, when you remind people that Cass Sunstein, you know, working for the Obama administration, tried to streamline regulations, it didn't resonate as much as Donald Trump saying in his first term that for every new regulation that two needed to be removed. But this is something that really cuts to the heart of folks' frustration. I mean, President Biden passed a lot of landmark legislation, but very little of it actually took effect so that people could see or feel it in his only term. So this is something that should focus the mind. Infrastructure reform, permitting process reform. This might not sound sexy, but it puts people to work. It shows a government that's responsive to people's needs that could have benefits even and especially in the energy revolution, not only the need for more electricity, but bringing more clean energy sources online, which was advocated for by Senator Joe Manchin, who took a lot of flack for it. But tell us where this effort, as you see it, the simplification, can and should move forward.
So I worked with Manchin's office and testified for Congress a bunch of times on streamlining infrastructure permits. We actually got laws to put page limits on environmental reviews and time limits on the processes, and they haven't worked. And the reason they haven't worked is because we haven't gotten down to the nub of the problem, which is that we still have this enormous code. There are like 150 million words of binding federal law and regulation that literally is impossible to comply with. You can't, in many situations, both protect historic buildings and protect endangered species and do this and do that. You can't do all those things. So when you're in government, you have to make trade-offs. And that requires giving people in government the authority to make trade-off judgments and be politically accountable. Instead, we've built a process of approval that assumes that law validates decisions. That's actually the wrong idea of law. Law should set a framework that limits jurisdiction and provides oversight to make sure people don't make stupid or venal decisions and stuff. But law is not supposed to make decisions. It can't decide whether building the transmission line is worth going through a pristine forest. That's a political judgment that has to be made. And we could completely transform government and deal with all kinds of endemic problems like poor schools and homelessness, as well as modernized infrastructure, if we simply went from a 150 million word code with processes for everything to a system where law is pulled back into a framework that allows responsible officials to make the judgments needed to fix things.
This sounds theoretical to some folks, but what's important is to translate it to the fact that this is what's stopping, in your argument, and not only your argument, it's stopping government from working effectively so that people can get the benefits of government, which is something that Democrats should care about. Again, this was something, you know, under the David Osborne's book, Reinventing Government, that Al Gore and Bill Clinton took on the road to some popularity. Right. But, you know, the fact that so many landmark bits of legislation were passed and very little was seen should be a source of frustration to Democrats as well as Republicans, right?
What's needed are simpler codes, but I don't want to minimize that this is radical. I mean, after the 1960s, we rebuilt the regulatory system to try to dictate daily choices, to prove that every choice was legally correct. And it doesn't work. It's just central planning. So I could write a code and have done for the environment. I have a paper coming out from the Manhattan Institute on this, on what a new authority structure would look like to fix infrastructure. Not that hard. And it's not hard to come up with an authority structure to make sure that it's not a stupid decision. That's not hard either. What's hard is to have 50 hearings, even for small projects, and to have lawsuits over small things. Like recently a project was blocked by a court because the court said the project hadn't adequately reviewed environmental justice. Well, I'm not against environmental justice, but that's one public goal out of 100, right? Whether it's putting the transmission line going or whatever. And so you can't actually have a lowest common denominator governing system, which is what we've created, which is, you know, why everything's paralyzed.
As someone who comes from, I think it's fair to say, the center right, how does this effort at simplification that you've been beating the drum on from a lawyerly common sense perspective run into a buzzsaw about federalism, about states' rights versus the federal government? How do you square that circle?
Well, first of all, the center right thing, I think I am considered center right at this point, but I wrote the introduction to Al Gore's book, Common Sense Government. So I worked very closely with Gore and Clinton, unless for most of my life I was a Democrat. Federal law should preempt state and local approvals for interstate projects, period.
For interstate projects?
Yeah, for interstate projects. You just can't do it. Or for projects with regional significance. There was this fantastic project for an intermodal transfer facility for the Port of Long Beach that's been killed now after like 15 years of process or something. because all the, it couldn't comply with all the state and local codes. Well, it was going to be incredibly environmentally efficient. It was going to take trucks off the roads and put them on long rail lines, saving a lot of energy and fuel and traffic and everything else. And it got killed because the local community didn't want to have the construction of the facility near there. Well, that's crazy. The country needs the facility. We have to make these choices, right? So the federal government has to make those choices, whether the states and localities like it or not. This country runs on an interstate highway system, half of which was built 10 years after the law was passed, a 29-page law in 1956. It would take 10 years just to get approval for a stretcher road today. This country runs on rail lines that go over mountain ranges. Think about that. What are the odds that are that you could get approval for a rail line that goes over a mountain range today? Zero. Not one. And yet, all these environmentalists and the people who like these things happily use the products that come over that rail line every day, you know, but you could never build it again. So we're living in a dream world where people have gone off into the stratosphere of some kind of perfect code and have lost sight of the fact that governing always involves trade-offs, always. Mm-hmm. And you've got to create an authority structure to do that, whether you want a successful Defense Department or to deal with the tragedy of homelessness.
Ryan Seacrest here. When you have a busy schedule, it's important to maximize your downtime. One of the best ways to do that is by going to ChumbaCasino.com. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino games like spin slots, bingo, and solitaire that you can play for free for a chance to redeem some serious prizes. So hop on to ChumbaCasino.com now and live the Chumba life. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Drivers who switch and save with Progressive could save hundreds. With that kind of money, you could go big time on a fancy water bottle with ultra-titanium alloy metal. You're not sure why you need all that. I mean, it just holds water. But you're getting it anyway. Because if you're hiking near an active volcano and you accidentally drop the bottle into molten lava, your water will still be icy cold. Switch to Progressive and you could save big time. For water bottles. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates, not available in all states. Potential savings will vary.
Putting aside the fact that I'm fascinated the interstate highway law was 29 pages, this does cut to the heart of people wanting to see that their government can work again, can deliver for them again. A lot of union leaders are actually in favor of a lot of the streamlining and regulatory reform because this NIMBYism and the endless litigation stops us from actually getting things done, delivering for people. There's common ground to be found here in ways that can make people restore faith that government can work again, it seems to me.
There is, although ultimately Al Gore's reinventing government effort, and he understood well the need for simplification and giving more flexibility to officials, and that's what was in his book that I wrote the introduction to. And he did a number of pilot projects that showed how successful that would be. Ultimately, it failed. And the reason it failed is you can't give officials authority and flexibility unless they can be accountable when they mess up. No one will give any public official the right to do what they want unless they can be accountable at a minimum. They just won't do it. It's like a law of physics. And the public unions would not even talk about any civil service overhaul or anything like that.
I want to get to civil service reform because Trump is proposing something that I view as draconian that would actually replace civil servants. This isn't just the Teddy Roosevelt fan and me talking, but with sort of partisan lackeys who are likely to be less efficient and effective and informed. But let's get to that after we talk about DOGE. So this has gotten a lot of attention and it has been viewed, as you say, through primarily cutting waste, fraud, and abuse. Now, even there's trouble in that particular vision of paradise. Vivek Ramaswamy was going to co-run it, not exactly an advertisement for efficiency, and now he is off the project. The initial goal, $2 trillion in cuts. Now, you know, Musk admitting that perhaps that's not realistic. Moreover, it doesn't seem to have any clear line of authorities to get anything done. There have been very effective commissions, the Hoover commissions in the past, right, vested interest in this, which were run by former President Hoover under the administrations of Truman and Eisenhower to streamline government back in the day, but they were bipartisan. What is your take on this effort that's getting a lot of attention right now? Because it certainly doesn't seem to be bipartisan in its current conception, nor is it clear how it would actually implement its ideas.
Well, I'm glad it's getting a lot of attention. I love the idea of government efficiency. I also want government effectiveness. You know, I want government to work, right? As I indicated earlier, I think that it's barking up the wrong tree because it wants to cut bad programs, not make government work. You could save exponentially more by making government work, by getting infrastructure built. I did a study called 2 Years, Not 10 Years, where I found that the delays in infrastructure more than double the cost of projects, as well as harm the environment by prolonging polluting bottlenecks.
Interesting.
You could get twice as many infrastructure projects done for the same dollar if you could simply streamline the process and have it work like it does in countries in Europe. You know, so it'd be a year or two for approvals, not 10 years or 8 years, and, you know, with all the litigation and such. So there's enormous amount to be saved. DOGE hasn't gotten there yet, and it does require a new operating principle for government, as I suggested earlier. It's got to have government should focus on results, not fastidious procedural compliance with lawsuits every time there's a foot fault. It should focus on getting the job done. That's the job of government. And courts should stay out of the way unless someone acts in an arbitrary way. The job of courts isn't to decide whether the power line goes through the forest or not. That's a political decision. So we need to actually simplify and change those frameworks. I'm trying to get to DOGE. I have a lot of friends who are, you know, in that community and such. So if it stays in business, I am kind of reasonably hopeful that I can get them to, in areas like infrastructure, for example, to begin to realize that there are enormous gains to be gotten by creating clear lines of authority to make decisions and, you know, getting stuff moving again.
Do you agree that using the Hoover Commission precedent, that it would be more effective if it were bipartisan?
Clearly. And one of the suggestions that I'm putting out is, you know, a lot of the reasons we have all this red tape and process is because nobody trusts anybody, right?
Right.
They want to make sure that every decision gets squeezed through the eye of a legal needle, you know, and then that takes 5 or 10 years and it guarantees failure, not success.
Yes.
So the process designed to avoid failure causes failure, right? So you still have to deal with distrust. And so the way to deal with distrust, a little bit like the Hoover Commission, but have something like a base closing commission. You know, there are these nonpartisan commissions that recommend which military bases to close, because it's politically impossible because no elected official wants the base to close in its district, right? So you're at a stalemate in Congress automatically. So they have these nonpartisan commissions that recommend who closes, and people just have to live with it. And Congress ultimately decides. They don't have to do what they say. I think you could create a whole series of base closing commission things that could actually have power to approve or reject important decisions, including on infrastructure, but using their judgment. So it takes a month, not 10 years. You know, people have a process, they make a decision, and then it gets approved. So ultimately, I think the changes we're talking about, a simplification, need to be done by a recodification commission that would be like a Hoover Commission. It would be a nonpartisan commission. It would, area by area, come up with new codes.
How do you avoid regulatory capture or the disproportionate impact of lobbyists as they can have on legislation, let's say?
Well, I mean, you know, that's a problem in Washington, you know, as we know. And that's the reason why none of this can be negotiated on the Hill. Because it's like a law of legislative physics. It would take 10,000 lifetimes to change one part of the way any system, regulatory system works. Because every interest group in Washington, and there are 10,000 of them, have a vested interest in the status quo. And they all are paying congressmen $25,000, $50,000, right, to do what they say. So it has to be done by a Hoover Commission.
Interesting.
It has to come in all at once in one big package where people can see that there are wins as well as losses for every group. And then if the wins on balance are better than the losses, then Congress approves it. I mean, that's what Napoleon did. Napoleon came in, completely redid the codes. He did. He didn't write it. He appointed four judges. It took them 6 months to come up with a proposal for all the laws of France. It was a civil code run by a judge named Portalis. And that code is still the basis for law in half the civilized world.
I'm reluctant to get nostalgic for the Napoleonic era, given our current political conditions. So
the Trumpionic era. We'll have the Trumpionic era.
Oh, let's not do that. That said, Will Marshall, head of PPI, someone who's very involved in the Democratic Leadership Council, one of the leading policy thinkers of the Clinton-Gore era, and on, has an op-ed in The Hill where he says Democrats should have their own Doge Commission. And again, it's not mimicking the Elon Musk of it. It is simply saying that Democrats should be taking simplification, streamlining, making government more efficient and effective so it delivers for folks. They should be engaged in that process. What are your thoughts on that op-ed by him?
Will Marshall is clearly correct. The Democrats have nothing left if all they have is resentment that they lost. Because Americans know that they see it on the sidewalks. They see it in the inability to build anything that has been promised to them. So Democrats have to stand for something that works, not just stand for interest group politics.
I recommend the op-ed just because, again, for us to make progress, we need to find areas where we can depolarize the conversation. And I do think, Democrats, Republicans, and independents have an interest in making sure that government is delivering for people, because the larger game is attempts to discredit democracy. And the autocrats' counter argument always is, it's more efficient. Democracy is divided and dysfunctional, and autocracy is efficient. That's a bad trade-off from a standpoint of liberty, but we need to create a counterexample.
That's correct. But, the Democrats do have a problem, and I've written about this extensively, in that the public employee unions have collective bargaining agreements that have accreted over the last 50 years so that it really is impossible to reorganize a bad school. It really is impossible to have work rules that make sense to keep the subways clean or whatever. There are so many examples, and books have been written by leading scholars about how counterproductive it is for this. It's not about whether they should be paid fair wages. Of course they should be, or have fair work rules. It's the fact that we elect mayors and governors, and to a certain extent a president, who come into office shackled to these collective bargaining agreements that prevent them from doing what's needed to make it work. They can't reorganize the schools.
I think there's been an effort to demonize teachers that I don't have a lot of time for, but I do understand from a local, whether you're talking about a mayor or a governor, when people get in a pattern of thinking that the best you can do is manage decline, bad things happen. And of course, government's capable of doing much more, particularly if we sort of get off our respective ramparts and look at what works, which is one of the things I like. I mean, ultimately, simplification has another dimension, which is also clearing out a thicket of laws that are outdated and things that end up being shackles for action that's clearly common sense, that's in the interests of us all.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Drivers who switch and save with Progressive could save hundreds. With that kind of money, you could go big time on a fancy water bottle with ultra-titanium alloy metal. You're not sure why you need all that. I mean, it just holds water. But you're getting it anyway. Because if you're hiking near an active volcano and you accidentally drop the bottle into molten lava, your water will still be icy cold. Switch to Progressive and you could save big time. For water bottles. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates, not available in all states. Potential savings will vary.
I want to ask you about one aspect about DOGE, and it's something that we don't discuss, but given that the purpose is to cut spending, I wonder just what you make of the fact that Elon Musk himself, I believe through SpaceX, has $4 billion in federal contracts. One would think that that would not make him quick to streamline in those areas. But, the counter-argument, I suppose, would be he understands the system as it exists, having profited off it.
I think the conflict of interest rules in Washington are bad in both directions. They permit a bunch of conflicts of interest by people who come into office and figure out ways to make money, but they put a lot of nominees under a sort of a microscope because some relative works somewhere where it's not, you know, most of us wouldn't consider that to be much of a conflict. And as long as there's transparency, you can deal with it. I mean, Musk's relationship to government, given all that he's doing and the subsidies that he gets and the contracts, is very complicated, you know. And yes, so it will be an issue for him eventually. And I think people now are so excited about the prospect of making anything work that they're kind of glossing over it.
I think there's a danger in a democracy when you think that only sort of any form of a strong man can come and save us. And yet, clearly, there are certain executives, and this has been time immemorial. I imagine it was part of why Kennedy picked Robert McFarlane. We can debate that legacy in another day, that certain executives have an ability to break through bureaucratic noncompliance and get things done. And that is a positive good. Right. Again, if the goal is reform, if the goal is to show that government can deliver.
Yeah. So if you look at all the things that have worked in recently and in history, it's all because people stepped up to the plate and asserted authority. Operation Warp Speed, you know, getting the vaccines for COVID. They were spending billions of dollars to build manufacturing facilities for the vaccine before there was a vaccine. And there were officials that were designated by the president to do that, and they went out and took that risk and spent the money. Pennsylvania Governor Josh Shapiro, a Democrat, rebuilt the fallen I-95 in 12 days instead of 12 months because he waived every single rule. And he took responsibility to do that.
That's a great example.
And Harry Hopkins in 1933, Civil Works Administration was authorized. In 4 months, he allocated the money and hired 4 million unemployed Americans, the result of which was to build 255,000 miles of road, countless water and sewage drainage stuff. And the auditors went out and found almost no fraud. And Harry Hopkins, in the week after it was authorized, was sitting in the White House in his office. One day he authorized 126 projects that had been put to him by a governor. The next day he authorized 109 projects. Literally, that's how the process worked. And he hired 4 million people and it all got done. Nothing gets done unless a human being makes it happen.
Yeah.
And so we need to go to a system that doesn't get rid of process, but that simplifies it sufficiently so that it allocates authority to make decisions for people who are accountable. And if we don't trust the decisions, you can put a check and balance, same way the Constitution does, right? Let somebody else approve the decision. That's how I think federal personnel should work, is that people should be accountable, but there ought to be like an inspector general who can say, no, that's a partisan firing. We're not going to allow that.
So let's dig into that, because one of the proposals that Trump tried to do in his first term and seems intent on doing this term is something called Schedule F. Now, without getting into the full history of civil service reform, we'll give a back of the napkin version. Teddy Roosevelt and others, civil service reform, late 19th century, right, says, look, the spoils system is creating corrupt, incompetent, ineffective government because you get political patronage people in political patronage positions. They don't actually have any nonpartisan expertise in the area. And so we should stop this political patronage, you know, in effect, graft, rewarding of supporters, and go to a professional nonpartisan system. Easier said than done, but that was the transition that was made. And people like Michael Lewis have written elegantly, and I think persuasively, about the importance of some of these unsung heroes who work in government, right, who are issue experts, who right, try to stay outside the partisan fray. Now, presidents come in, and sometimes they get frustrated because they feel the bureaucracy is not as responsive to their orders as it might be. The Schedule F is an attempt, and as articulated by Steve Bannon and others, to really just put in Trump loyalists at a whole new level of government. And on the surface, you know, I could imagine some people saying, well, this is a bureaucratic thinning out of the thicket. That said, you wrote in a government executive magazine, I thought it was really interesting. You said Schedule F would create an ethos of fear, inducing civil servants to act like toadies, to follow any presidential dictate, even if contrary to fact or science. This is not an abstract fear with Trump. Tell us about your thoughts on that kind of reform, given that statement.
Right. Schedule F goes too far because it's intended to instill fear. You know, it's like Donald Trump got famous for saying, you're fired, right? So he wants to, you know, go out and say, you're fired. And there's nothing there. There is this phenomenon in civil service where people, not the issue experts that Michael Lewis talks about, but people in regulatory positions, not in expert positions, really drag their feet and don't do what the president wants because they disagree with it. There's actually an acronym for it called WeBeWig. We'll be here when you're gone. So there does need to be accountability for legitimate orders from political leaders that are not contrary to law. However, it ought to be a system that enjoys some level of trust. So Teddy Roosevelt wanted a system where he could fire anybody he wanted, but the Civil Service Commission back then had authority to veto any firing if it was done for partisan reasons. And that was actually put in a law called the Lloyd La Follette Act of 1912. What Schedule F ignores is that most senior civil servants want to do a good job. They don't have managerial authority over their employees. I mean, we're talking about senior civil servants who are in charge of 5 and 10,000 other civil servants who have no effective managerial authority. So you need to actually have a chain of accountability and authority that goes all the way up the line. You can't just have it be blaming the guy on top because things aren't working when he doesn't have the ability to make things work.
Interesting. So your preferred reform in this case would be just authority and responsibility and accountability.
Well, a lot less process for personnel judgments. Let people decide who's doing a good job, who's not. Put in a check and balance to safeguard against, you know, abusive decisions, but not have these processes. If you put a negative comment in a file for a federal civil servant, you can be hauled into a hearing that consumes on and off 6 months. For you to justify the negative comment, he doesn't get along with people or doesn't cooperate well. Well, how the hell do you prove that, right? So you have this system, it's even worse than the infrastructure approval system. It's all process, it's all proof, it's all legal bickering and nothing about getting the job done. It's a terrible, the civil service system, I have a working group with a bunch of leading political scientists and public administration experts right now, where basically everybody agrees we need to redo the civil service system. But the idea is not to create a culture of fear, but create a culture of trust.
Right.
Where everybody knows everybody else is doing their job. And you attract good people because you give them responsibility. In my simplified system, government officials have more authority. They come to work, they can roll up their sleeves and make things happen, like fix the highway in Philadelphia.
And lest we forget, fear is the opposite of trust. And I'm glad you mentioned that Josh Shapiro example because, you know, 12 days instead of 12 months when I-95 is at stake, that's something that people can get their minds around. I want you to close on this, Phil. Make a simple, if you will, case for how bipartisan simplification efforts could improve people's lives, could help them see that government was more effective and responsive.
If you have simpler laws, that means that more authority goes to the ground. So you're in a community, and how the local highway is getting built or rebuilt, how the local school is working, all those things now become something that you can make a difference in, or somebody you know can make a difference in. Because the local people actually have, within the framework of law, the authority to make decisions. So authority has a kind of gravitational force, draws people to it. Let's make this work better, or let's do it differently and make a park over here instead of that, or whatever. And so here's what we can do with homelessness. This person has a special problem. Let's deal with it. Could we have the authority to deal with it? Yeah. So if you create a simpler framework, all of a sudden, not only do things work better, everyone's re-empowered because everybody can make a difference now.
An empowered citizenry. What a concept. Phil Howard, thank you for your work. Thank you for your time. Thank you for your insight.
Great to be with you.
Ryan Seacrest here. When you have a busy schedule, it's important to maximize your downtime. One of the best ways to do that is by going to ChumbaCasino.com. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino games like spin slots, bingo, and solitaire that you can play for free for a chance to redeem some serious prizes. So hop on to ChumbaCasino.com now and live the Chumba life. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.